The AI conversation continues to change. For some people, that's terrifying. For others, it's the biggest opportunity they'll ever have. So I saw this the other day with the release of Claude Opus 4.5, and I think there's a significant takeaway here. We give prospective performance engineering candidates a notoriously difficult take-home exam. We also test new models on this exam as an internal benchmark. Within our prescribed 2-hour time limit, Claude Opus 4.5 scored higher than any human candidate ever. That's amazing. Now, all pride put away for a minute, let's go ahead and accept the fact that these AI models are now inherently smarter and faster than us in pure knowledge. Not wisdom, not life context, not personality, but raw, all-encompassing knowledge. And when we say, no, they're not, they hallucinate, which they do, they're just predicting next characters, which they are, they have token limits, they don't always follow best practices, which they don't, we need to honestly admit that the reason 95% of the time is the person prompting. Leave all the hate you want to below, but when a model can be this smart, can draw information from all over the place to consolidate to the best answer possible in seconds in a narrow context, we just can't beat it. And we're not going to beat it anymore. Give it a wider context, like a massive code base, then yes, its smartness dumbs down a bit and needs humans to give it direction. But these tools, say Claude Opus 4.5 or just released GPT 5.2, are currently today the worst we're going to see going forward. And if I haven't stepped on all the toes here, let me also say that the efficiency of prompting is way greater than us typing code from scratch. Hopefully we've established that already. That's old news. In fact, I've laughed at the idea of a prompt engineer for the longest time, but here we are. Instead of prompt engineers being particular people, it really has become a requirement of us all. Therefore, we can see and expect to see more coding sessions begin with prompts and coding overall moving more to natural languages, English for example, while deferring the syntax of coding to the LLM. I honestly have not started a coding session in the longest time without some sort of LLM sitting in front of me to kick it all off. Adding a new feature, fixing a bug, brainstorming best approaches, architecture, terminology, I can just think back on the past 3 months of my life and not really think of a time I haven't utilized an LLM. And guess what? All of your fellow programmers are doing the same. They may not admit it, but they are. And your managers probably want you to. In fact, some companies are requiring it or at least granting free access to all of their devs. What to do then? Whether you're a junior or you're well-seasoned, what to do about it? Well, at this stage, you're left with one option. Get really good at getting good output from LLMs in such a way that makes you more efficient. We still need to know logic and programming principles and solving problems with code and best practices, but you'll defer the details to the LLM. And again, this means coding sessions will begin with prompts and coding overall moving more to everyday languages while deferring the syntax of coding to the LLM. And if this is the case, which I think it's pretty obvious, then you need to be thoughtful about making sure you are able to get the best outputs, which of course starts with the right inputs. So in this video, I want to give you 5 tips that I found extremely helpful in getting solid results from your LLM. Following these 5 tips, I'm able to use LLMs 80% of the time for all my coding and not sacrifice on quality. And instead of just listing the 5 tips out for you, let's actually use them to build a desktop app with Tori, which is a framework for building cross-platform desktop apps. So I have an M1 MacBook Pro still, and I'm always running up against space limitations. So I want to build an app where I choose a folder that I know has a lot of big files, and I can see a list of each folder and individual files, the size of each of these from largest to smallest, so I can determine what big files I can delete to free up space. Kind of like a simpler clean my Mac type of app. And I'll make sure to push this up to GitHub in case you want to grab it or suggest changes or additions to it. And yes, I need to just buy some extra storage or upgrade, but how else would I get to have this kind of fun? So let's go ahead and get started. This video is brought to you by Warp. So tip number 1 is to force the LLM to use current documentation. LLMs do not stay current. In fact, even new model releases are still months behind. Sure, they can search for current answers, but I can't tell you how many times I've asked an LLM to install Tailwind CSS for me, and they waver between version 3 and 4, which has a lot of upfront differences. Like, it will install version 4 and then try to set up version 3. And then you get errors, and after like 5 minutes of around the world, it realizes, oh wait, I'm looking at version 3. I need to actually go and get info for version 4. And you're like, see how stupid LLMs are? To which I say, no. How stupid am I for not forcing it to use the latest documentation? So ideally, when you're working on an app, say a Next.js app, a Golang app, or installing and setting up a package, you want the LLM to use the official documentation, not only for up-to-date versions, but up-to-date examples and references and rules. And to streamline this process of using the latest documentation, I exclusively these days use the Context 7 MCP, which will reach out and use the latest documentation for the tools we're using. Instead of arbitrarily gathering data from where LLMs thinks is best, which is often outdated, it instead queries the latest docs themselves and finds the solutions from the source. Let me show you how this works as we begin to build this app. So first, let's create a new Tori app. And I'll do this manually because there are prompts or options that we need to choose in creating it. So looking at the docs here, I simply run this command, npm create Tori app latest. So let me open up Warp, which is the tool I use a lot of the time these days. It's what they call an agentic development environment built with Rust, and their dev team actually builds Warp using Warp. So if anyone has an idea of prompt-first development, they do. I have a separate video of the features of Warp, their number one ranking on Terminal Bench, things like that, and I'll put a link to that video below. And it's free to try out. That link will be below as well. So let me CD into a folder I want to use, and I'll just run this command. And I'll just call it File Manager Desktop. I'll choose TypeScript, npm, and let's pick React, and TypeScript. And to run the app, first I'm going to do npm install to install my packages. And then Warp's already guessing my next move, which is npm run Tori dev to run the app. All right, and here's my basic Tori app. Enter a name, Travis, hit greet, and it says, hello, Travis, you've been greeted from Rust. So there we have our starting point. So next, let's set up Context 7. So just go to Google, type in Context 7, context7.com. You'll need to create a free account, so just go to sign in, continue with Google or GitHub, whatever you want. And then you'll need to create an API key, so just click on Dashboard, scroll down, and you can create your API key here. Next, if you go up here to Install, it'll take you to their GitHub page, and scroll down until you find Warp or whatever terminal you're using. So I'm going to find Install and Warp here, and I'm just going to copy this command. And then inside of Warp, you just do a slash add MCP. These are Warp's slash commands, so choose add MCP, and just paste the whole thing here. And then you want to add your API key where it says your API key. So make sure you update that. And that's it. Save it, and you're good to go. And then just to double check, if you go to Settings and AI and go down to MCP servers here, just make sure that it's enabled, Context 7. And you have two tools available, which is Resolve Library ID and Get Library Docs. And now we go back to our project. Let's just say something like add shadcn to my Tori project with Tailwind CSS. And then say, use Context 7. This is the magic phrase. And when I run this, it's going to locate the correct docs to reference and even which part of the docs it needs to reference. And see, it's going to use this MCP tool, the Resolve Library ID tool. It's going to find shadcn UI. So it found the library. And then it's going to get the library docs of the information it needs. So I'm going to run that. You can go back to the main page and just type in shadcn in shadcn UI. And we're basically just looking at this. So we're searching the doc for what we need. Here's all of their docs. And it's just pulling the relevant information from this. And so it's going to install and it's going to do all of this stuff according to the docs. So if I actually go to shadcn Vite, if I go to this page, like if I was installing it myself, I'm going to see npm create Vite and then install Tailwind. I'm going to have this tsconfig. So remember this bit here. You're going to see this. You're going to see this part of the tsconfig file. The Vite config, you're going to see this being used. And also, it's going to try to add a button because all of this is on this page that it's referencing. So it's setting this up according to the latest docs and even the latest examples. So here's the Vite config, the tsconfig. Now it's moving on to Tailwind. Now look at this, add button, just like we talked about. All right, so now I have this Tori desktop app with shadcn and Tailwind ready to move forward with the app I want to build. And this leads me into tip two. Number two, always plan first. This applies to everything you do. So we're in this place now where many devs are starting with a prompt. We've established this. A new project or an already established project, doesn't matter. Many of us are beginning tasks now with prompts. So let's decide what we want to do with this first iteration, and let's create a plan for Warp to work through step by step. This keeps the LLM from going off on tangents we don't want to be going off on. Now, Warp has a new feature for planning. I can use the plan/ command and then give it my entire game plan that I want to achieve here. So I'll do /plan, you'll see the slash command here, and describe my task. Here's my task in detail, or this portion of the app that I'm building in detail. So this should, and see how I'm using use context 7 when I mention Shad Cien, or when I mention Tori, I'm gonna say use context 7. And I even know that Tori has a plugin called file system. See right here, when I choose folder, use Tori's file system plugin, use context 7. So if I go to the Tori website and I go to guides and look at plugins, there is a file system plugin right here. So I'm telling it, use this plugin and then use context 7 to go and check out these docs to make sure you're doing it properly. So I'm not just randomly asking it to figure all this stuff out. I'm helping it along the way. And again, resolve library ID is the tool that's going to go find the Tori library. Let's run it. And I'm running these manually, because that's how I like to do it. You could set it to automatically approve everything. I don't like to do that. And what we're doing here is we're gonna generate a plan of action. And we'll see that come up here in a second. And it's looking up the topic of file system read directory, list files from the documentation. So now we have this game plan before we even begin building anything. I can edit this plan directly. Like if I need to add some information, I can edit that directly. I can ask it to change something about it, and when I do, it will version the new changes. So see this version here, show version history. If I were to add some stuff to this or ask it to change some part of the plan, it'll refresh the plan and I'll have a new version. And I can use this for a team to work with if the plan is that big, and we can iterate on it until we've agreed. So I have step one, install required plugins, configure permissions, create UI components, implement file system scanning logic. The whole plan is laid out. Implement size calculation, implement reveal and finder, and then replace default app UI, some technical considerations, all of that. So let's say this is ready to go. I agree with it all. I can choose to execute a part of this plan or the whole thing. Let's go ahead and execute the entire plan. And here's my steps. So step one, install Tori plugins. As it works to build this thing, it's gonna walk me through my tasks. And I'm gonna see here everything that's going on. And again, I can edit this, I can refine it, or I can accept it. I'm gonna accept this. Once task one is finished, it's gonna move on to the next task. And ultimately, it keeps me up on which steps of this plan it's working on, showing me the diffs so I'm aware of what's being updated. And see, it made a mistake and it actually went and updated the plan. So now I have a version 2 with the updated plan. Pretty cool. And this now leads me to my third tip, which is spend ample time planning and don't rush. Okay, so this planning feature is, to me, vital in LLM development and is one reason I prefer Warp these days. 99% of problems people are having with AI development is that they are letting it run wild, having no clue what it's doing. It's a recipe for disaster. Warp and Claude and others have a YOLO mode, but unless I'm building something petty that I may erase later, I think it's very important to be aware of every change that the LLM makes. If you're creating some sort of feature, you are responsible and the LLM works for you. The integrity of the code you're pushing reflects you, not the LLM. Remember that. Now, this plan that Warp creates when we're working with code bases that already exist is a game changer. Why? Because of the helpful context it gives you. Let me show you what I mean. Now that it's running, it's actually telling me what to verify. So it's giving me things to verify. And then it says, I'll stop the server with this. Please let me know when you finish testing or if you encounter any issues. So let's see if we have any issues. Let me select a folder. Let's just choose a Python app folder. Three items found. Let's try something bigger, like the whole repos folder. 51 items found. But this doesn't look right. Something is off. These folders I know are way bigger than 992 bytes. So let's say Travis Media Astro. Let's just see how big that is. That's actually 666 megabytes. So yeah, something's off. So it's waiting for me to give feedback on if something is wrong. So I'm going to put a plan together and try to get this fixed. So here's my plan, and the reason I'm doing this is because I want to understand how things were currently set up, what's wrong, and what the plan is to fix it. I want to know the whole context here. That's why I'm doing this plan. Let's see what it pulls up. Now, instead of me just saying, hey, fix this problem, figure it out and fix it, I can actually take this plan and see for myself how this app is coming together. So the root cause is that line 47 uses this stat function. It's right for files, but it's not right for directories because of the recursiveness. The current implementation is this. So I see here that this is wrong for directories. What's the solution? Well, since it checked the documentation, this plugin provides a dedicated size function that works for files and directories. What are the changes to be implemented? Update the import statement. Replace stat with size. Add the right permissions. And then there's some performance consideration. And now I'm up to speed. So I'm not just telling it, fix it. I don't care what's wrong. Just make it work. I'm actually understanding what was wrong and what it's proposing to fix. This is why I like planning. So let's execute this plan and see if that fixes it. Replacing the stat function with the size function. Good. That's step one. Actually, step two. Step three, allow size permissions. Looks good. And then the final step, test the updated size calculation. So it's going to run my dev server and then it's going to read the output. So let's try it again. Let's try the whole repos folder. And this looks a lot better. Folder size analyzer, that's actually this project. Calendar, these are just Rust project, income app. These are just my repos of apps that I've been working on. So here's all my repos, all of my sizes from largest to smallest. If I click on one, it should open in Finder. Yep, there it is. Click on calendar. There it is. Looks like my app is working great. It wasn't working. And after some follow-up planning and fixes, now it's working great. This is how you work in real-life scenarios with code going into production with a team of devs. You don't fire off a prompt and hope for the best. Everyone on social media may make you think you're missing out by not doing that, but you should take time to plan, to understand the proposed changes, and the finished changes. And this is where I'm at these days. I begin probably 80% of all features with planning. And in doing so, I can commit code that I can stand behind. Number four is rules. Now you probably already know this, but every project that uses an LLM should have rules. So Claude has Claude MD, Google has Gemini MD, and Warp Warp MD. These files keep you from having to re-explain your setup on every prompt. Now there are two things I want you to note with this file. Ask 10 people, they'll give you the 10 best configurations, but here's my advice. First, in the most basic, run /init to get a baseline for your app, how it runs, file structure, etc. You can do this from the outset or after your app has grown a bit, as their example here. So let me run this, and I need to initialize git to make this work. And it actually wants to scan my code base and run init for me. That's great. I'm going to do it manually just so I can show you. Init. Yes, index this code base also. Would you like to create a warp.md file? Of course. And this will search over your code base and create a warp.md file with an overview of your app, like technology stack, dev commands, how to build the app, architecture, configurations, etc. And then here's the diff it proposed. Let's go ahead and accept it, and it will create the warp.md file. Again, you can do this with Claude as well with /init. Now, this is not a README. It's not there to explain your project to others. It can, but that's not its real purpose. Instead, this file actually gets prepended to every single prompt. So when you ask the agent to do something, it's reminded every time of your architecture setup and commands to run your apps or tests or linter. And in doing so, you're not allowing the LLM to wander or lose sight of the context of your application, and it produces much more accurate results. Second, at this point, you want to begin adding rules as you need them. Do not just arbitrarily start adding stuff. You may have some generic template that serves you well, but if not, be conservative on your adding to this file. When you see the LLM fumble several times on the same thing, add a rule. When it tries to commit changes without your approval or do anything write-based, with your database, add a rule. So you may have a commit workflow, something like this. Always follow this checklist before committing and pushing. Number one, run the full test suite. And then you can say, must show this passed, this skipped, this warnings with no failures. Number two, format code. Number three, lint code, must compile with exit code 0, no errors. And then stage and commit, push only when instructed. And then some critical notes, tests must pass, lint must pass. So you're giving the LLM specific rules for your commit workflow. And this is the place to put it. But don't go and add all this at one time since you saw it here and thought it useful. Let these come organically over time, and you'll eventually end up with a template of your own that makes sense to you for this particular project and will help guide the LLM to better outputs, which is the whole goal we're trying to achieve here. Now, the final tip here is to have a senior engineer review your code before every commit. And of course, the senior engineer will be the LLM. This is sort of like having a PR review preview before the actual person will review your code. It gives you a chance to clean up before you send it out for others to see. And if you're just building a personal app for yourself, this is still a good practice every time before you commit. Sometimes the LLM churns and it ends up creating unnecessary files or code it forgets to remove, or in hindsight, there's an easier way to rewrite or refactor something. Or it allowed wide open permissions from the outset, but never toned them down. Often when you create a PR and someone calls out something stupid you've done, you already knew about it. You just looked at the code so much, you overlooked it all. Well, let the LLM be your second set of eyes first. So I actually run a prompt regularly before each commit. I have it saved here in my warp drive, and let's take a look at it. And feel free to steal this. Review the code we just wrote like a senior engineer. Use git status stage to see which files we've touched. Focus on performance, security, edge cases and failure modes, and best practices and cleanup. If it's good, say good to ship. If not, list the top fixes and show the exact code changes. Performance issues, overprivileged configurations, edge cases, lack of error handling, unused commands or variables, the LLM will notify you of each, and you should take time to see how each one can better your app or clean up your app before you commit. So let's run this and see the results. And yes, I know we should have committed like 5 times already, but again, this is just all for demonstration. So here are the findings: some critical issues, blocking UI on large folders, so a performance issue, security issue is path traversal vulnerability. Then there's security with overly permissive capabilities. This is like often these apps allow everything up front to make sure it works, but then you still need to scale it back later. And then there's a memory leak potential, so a performance issue, and then an edge case. These are all considered critical, required fixes, so it wants to go ahead and start fixing these for me. So before you commit these and a senior sees this, like, hey, this is way too permissive, and hey, this is a memory leak potential, your LLM senior engineer can catch it first and can run the fixes. So let's accept this and run these fixes, and we'll be good to go. Improve security by restricting file system permissions. Then we have the unused greet command. So when we create the Tori app, by default, you get this greet command. So let's get that taken out. That might be something that you'd leave in there accidentally. Then it's going to verify the changes still compile, and it says it's going to add one more improvement for better UX. A visual counter during scanning. That's pretty neat. I didn't ask for that, but I'll take it. All right, issues fixed. We got performance fixed. And look at this. Before, we had this slow big O complexity. And after, batch updates every 50 items. Before, no way to cancel. Now we've added an abort controller to cancel. Security, we've tightened up security. Edge cases, code cleanup. And if you want to know exactly what they changed, here it is. Test before shipping. Try scanning a folder with 1,000+ files. Let's do that. So let's give it a final run. So I'm actually going to do an NPM run Tori build. I'm going to build this into an actual application on my MacBook. And it should be much faster now. It shouldn't be overly permissive. It should be secure and all those things we just asked our senior engineer LLM to do. So there, it's finished building. At this point, I can just drag this into applications, and then I can just say file manager desktop. I can open it like any other application. Here it is. And let's try a big folder, like the entire desktop of my computer, which is massive. Let's open it. And here we have, we're counting up as we're scanning, 98, 179, 274. Here's the items. So my desktop files is a 15 gig folder. Maybe I need to scan that one and figure out what to delete. But let's say, hey, temp photos, what is this? We got 5 gigs. Well, I can double click it and that opens it up in Finder. So then I can go in there and figure out what to delete. So it looks to be fast. We've ran our performance and security improvements, and I'm ready to push this off for my senior engineer to review. And what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to push this up to GitHub. I'll leave a link down below if you guys want to grab this application, or if you want to add to it, feel free to submit a PR. Maybe we can build on it, whatever, but it'll be there. And before we wrap this up, the team over at Warp are celebrating the launch of these new features. Be sure to check out the link below to try Warp out yourselves for free. So those are 5 tips or guidelines that I follow that allow me to use LLMs in a professional setting in a way that produces great outputs and produces code that I can be proud to commit. If you found this video helpful, give it a thumbs up. If you haven't subscribed to the channel, consider doing so, and I'll see you in the next video.